Today's reading comes from Genesis, the first book of the Bible, starting at chapter 12, the call of Abram. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. They set out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. Abram travelled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh in Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he went onwards toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And then he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward Negev.
I want to talk about the call of Abraham, or Abram as he was called at this point in time of his life, and his wife Sarai, who then became Sarah. And I don't know what you're called by your nearest and dearest. I wonder if I was to sort of come into your homes, into your private space, and get those nicknames, those sort of soft undertones that maybe you whisper to each other, or maybe the opposite of what those are when you're perhaps telling someone what to do. My distinct memory of school is my teachers telling me, "Hey, Thomas, get your finger out and get your work done." That was my memory of my name at school. I wonder if God was to call you today, what name he would call you. What would he say to you? How would he speak to you? I expect that he would know what to do, because he knows you instinctively, and he knows me instinctively. So he would know how to say that. But I don't know whether you've been in a crowded room when there's a big hubbub of noise that's going on around you. And suddenly someone in the far corner of the room mentions your name. You ever been in that situation? Where you can't hear anything else, and then suddenly you hear your name. Because your name is precious to you. It's who you are. It's part of your identity. And God knew who Abram was and called him by his name. I don't know whether you've read the book of Genesis as a whole, okay? And you know, maybe this is a little task for you between leaving church today and coming back to the church meeting. You know, you just got plenty of time, haven't you? You can get this done. But there are quite a number of chapters in the book of Genesis. And the first 11 chapters deal with the whole of human history as recorded in the Bible up to this point. So we're not quite sure exactly how many years that is, but it's several hundred years, between 400-500 years of human history that's recorded in the Bible. And right up until this point, at the end of chapter 11, it comes to an abrupt end, and we start with the genealogy of Abram. And for the next 39 chapters of Genesis, we deal with Abraham, we deal with his son, we deal with his grandson, and his great-grandson. Now, I'm sure you know who those people are. Anyone want to tell me who his son was? Who was his grandson? And who was his great-grandson? Joseph. And those four people dominate the rest of the book of Genesis. So what happens here, and the change that's taking place here, is hugely significant, because the whole course of history is now being brought to a sudden stop, and this is important. You need to understand what's going on here. And the call of Abraham is so, so important. Actually, if you go back to the previous chapter, you'll find that Terah, his father, had also seemed to have received a call, because at the end of the genealogy line, it tells you that Terah and Abraham and Lot and Sarai all went towards Canaan. And we don't get that picture in chapter 12. We get this picture of Abraham going by himself and with his family. But his father went with him as well, and eventually he died en route to Canaan. And Terah traveled with him and took him as part of the household. Now, if you know anything about Middle Eastern, South Asian, African households, they're a little bit different to ours. They all live together. Now, I don't know whether you live with your parents and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, but you can just imagine all living in the same place, in the same space, and everyone eating from the same table. That's what would have happened here. So the whole family got up and went. But we don't know what happened to Terah and how he was called and how he impacted on this. But we do know that he eventually made the journey. But he only got to Haran and he died. What the Bible doesn't tell us, because the Bible here covers a whole lot of a huge history of information, and yet gives us so little detail. We don't know whether God had actually spoken to his Abraham's father or not, but we do know that he spoke directly to Abram. Yeah. And that's what's important to us today. And you know what? Terah, his father, only lived 205 years. Now, you might be thinking, well, I'd like to live 205 years, but this was really low scale in the times of biblical times, where people were living for 600, 700, 800 years. Okay, so he died quite young. So maybe something went wrong. Something was significantly wrong, which resulted in his death, because he never reached Canaan. And sometimes when God calls us, there may be things that get in the way. Things that stop us from doing what God calls us to do. We're never guaranteed anything in this world. We're not guaranteed our 70 years and 10 or even beyond with modern medicine today. But we do know that God has got a purpose and a call for each one of our lives. Amen. And we need to fulfill that. We need to know what it is, and we need to get on, and we need to do it. And that's what's happening here in this story of Abram. Now, I don't have a lot of time today, because I want to try and lead this into the core of the work of Child's Trust and how that happened, and give you an insight into the story behind Child's Trust. So I'm going to move fairly quickly here. But we do know that in chapter 12, we now pick up the story when Abram is now talked to directly by God. Can you just imagine that? You wake up tomorrow morning, it's Monday morning, you think the worst day of the week, and you've got to go to work, or you've got to start your normal workly, your weekly schedule, and God appears to you and says whatever he's going to say to you. Wouldn't that be amazing? I don't know how God speaks to you. God normally speaks to me in crisis. So crisis for me is probably a good thing, although I don't experience that pleasure at the time. But in the benefit of hindsight, God tends to speak to me in crises. How does God speak to you? And maybe because of my own inflated view of life and who I am, that God has to bring me to a point where you're in a bit of crisis and now I can actually get the message home to you. Can you just imagine the conversation that Abraham had with his wife Sarai? He walked in through the door, it would have been a tent door, a canopy of some kind, and sat down and said, guess what, Sarai, we're going to move. We're going to get up and leave the Ur of the Chaldees, which was a wonderful place. It's we think it was in a place called just outside where the British soldiers were based when they went to Iraq and Basram. And it's a wonderful area where there's lots of water, so that the sheep can be looked after. You know why we have lots of sheep in Wales, don't you? Because we have lots of rain, okay? And this was a wonderful place, lots of green areas, lots of oases, and a wonderful place to live. And yet God is saying to Abram, I want you to get up and go to a place which is just full of dust. I can imagine I would love to be the fly on the wall in the conversation between Abram and Sarai. You mean we're going to leave everything that we've built, everything that God has given us, in this wonderful place with all the benefits that we have, to go to a place which is just dust? You must be off your head. You must be crazy. You must have really lost it at this point in time. So I should think that there was a bit of a battle that took place. And, Abraham himself was probably feeling quite comfortable. He got used to the lifestyle of the Ur of the Chaldees. And for some of us, we've got used to what it is that God has blessed us with. But we forget that God has blessed us with those things so that we can do something else with those things for him. And we don't make that connection. And maybe we become a little comfortable. You see, the Ur of the Chaldees was not a place to leave. Not a place that you choose to leave, especially when you're thinking you're going to go into a desert. Well, the journey begins. Eventually, Abraham at this stage, I have so difficulty remembering this Abraham at this stage of the story, and takes his family. And en route, they stop in Haran, and other texts other than the Bible seem to indicate that was for a period of 5 years. So something happened, something slowed them down, something along the way caused them to stay 5 years in Haran before eventually Terah died, and the family then went down into Canaan. And sometimes when God calls us, we set out well. And we set out on that journey and we get sidetracked. Sidetracked by life. Sometimes good things. Families. Houses. Jobs. Mortgages that we need to pay for the houses where the good schools are. And we get sidetracked into doing stuff that perhaps sometimes stops us from doing what God has called us to do. None of those things are wrong. Don't get me wrong. None of those things are wrong. They're good things. They're things that all families want to do. But if they take us away from the journey that God has for us, then they become wrong. They become wrong. The story of Charles Truss begins back in 1989. Anyone alive in 1989? I was working for the AA, and I was the head of personnel for the IT division. It was called Management Services in those days, and I was doing okay. I had been given promotion after promotion, and now there was another promotion that I was going to, and I was this was for me. This job had been created for me. And you know what? I become so puffed up and arrogant in my own abilities that I didn't even think whether God wanted me to have this role. And I got turned down. And I've never been so upset over a job in my life. It was an humiliation for me to be turned down because it would have been something which I would have expected to do. So I was rejected, and I had to deal with rejection, and I had to learn what it was like to be told, we don't want you. But this was part of God's plan. Because then God took me away from the AA to work for a company in Winnish Triangle, where I became the European HR director of a company, again, a big IT company. And things were wonderful. More money, company car, good holidays because we had more money. Things were going good for us in the Thomas household. But through those 3 years that I was working there, and certainly for the last 2 years, a degree of unsettledness began to creep into my life. You know, I've said to you that crises is the way that God speaks to me, and when I become unsettled, I know that God's trying to shake me up because I'm not listening properly. I'm not listening to that voice that's coming through other sources. And he needs to unsettle me a little bit to get me to the point where I'm prepared to listen. And this grew and this grew and this grew. And we talked about it a little bit as a family. And, you know, Julie tolerated me in terms of the conversation and said, yeah, you know, it's sort of this. You're doing okay, Mark. Just forget about it. Just do this stuff. It came to the point where I was traveling regularly. I was in a different European city 3 days out of five. And one day, about 4:30 a.m. in the morning, I was hurtling down the M3 at a speed which I will not describe. Because I was late for the red-eye flight to Brussels that day. In the meantime, I was trying to shave and keep one hand on the steering wheel. Not that I recommend this. Don't do this at home. And in the middle of this, suddenly something happened where God spoke. And God said, "What on earth are you doing? What on earth are you doing? You're going at this breakneck speed which could take your life. You're doing something really stupid by trying to shave as you're driving. And I'm trying to tell you that I want you to do something else. Please listen. Please listen." And there was no audible voice, but I remember that message coming through loud and clear. Loud and clear. Well, the next few months were difficult because I had to try and communicate this to my family, that God wanted me to do something different. And that wasn't easy, because they, like me, had become comfortable in what we had. And to give that up and to do something very, very different, because God, I believe, was calling me to set up a training company that would allow me more time to be able to do work amongst the Christian agencies around, as well as being a commercial company. And they didn't quite get that. We reached a point where we almost agreed to disagree. And you know, I trust that, Mark, you know, you've been in this road before, and if you think it's right, then do it. And so I decided to resign. And I remember it very clearly, because it's the equivalent of next week, which would have been the usual half term. you know, the last Monday in the month of May, and I was going into work. Julie was down in Cardiff with the boys on half-term holiday, and I was going to go into work, and I was going to resign, and I was going to go for it, and you know what happened? I bottled up. I didn't do it. And, of course, I had no peace as a result of that. And for the rest of that week, I was in agony, about torment, about what I should do. And so I then went into work the following week, and on the Tuesday of that week, there was a big announcement of something that had gone wrong in the business, and they were going to have to cut back. And part of my division of the company was going to have to cut back as well. And my job wasn't affected, but some of my people were. And I said to them, "Well, why don't you make me redundant? Why don't you let me go? Because, you know, I want to go because I feel that I want to do something different." And they said, "Well, actually, we want you to implement this program for us. As long as you're prepared to implement the program, you can go at the end of that, and we won't then reduce your department." And so at the end of that process, I was able to walk away from my job with almost a year's salary to be able to start my business, whereas if I had resigned the week before, I would have been without any money, any compensation. God's timing is always perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you think that it's not, then probably he's trying to tell you something. Well, that was the birth of the business, and for the next few years, between 93 and 97, I did what I set out to do. I helped create this business, which was reasonably successful. We were able to give a percentage of the time, tithe the business into Christian ministries and help them develop leaders. And that took me to different parts of Europe and into the Middle East. And then suddenly I was having a conversation with someone. And some of you know who this is. He's an Indian national by the name of Solomon. And he said to me, he said, "Brother Mark," he said, "why don't you come to India and do this stuff?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to go to India. Who wants to go to India?" And then suddenly something happened in that conversation. I said, "Well, look, let's test it. Let's talk to somebody. And if they say that there's an opportunity for me to do what I do in India, then I'll come and do that." He rung up somebody, and the guy said, "Actually, we've got a program running at the moment, and the guy who runs the HR side of it is just cancelled. Wouldn't it be wonderful if Mark could come?" So I was on the flight to Delhi. This is my first flight, back in 1997. Well, the rest is history, as they say, because I fell in love with India. I fell in love with its people, its culture, its food, and its heat, because I love heat. And all these things started to gel, and Julie then came with me in 98. We were running a program for Tear Fund up in Dehradun, a training program, and she came with me, and we were invited by one of the partners to go and see a particular project. And that particular project is called Jika. And we have someone here from Jika today. Isn't that remarkable? So this was the start of something significant. Because we came back from that trip after we had been to Jika. And we came here. And we said, "Hey, we need your help. We need to sponsor 5 children or to support 5 children to be able to help them through their education and to provide them with some extra food." By the end of that morning, we had 10 people signed up to do something. And by the following year, we had the birth of Charles Trust, and the rest is history. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah. No.
The journey began in 89 and restarted in 98 into 99. And we're going to hear a little bit more about what happens a little bit later on. But I just want to tell you that if you read the rest of the story about Abram, you'll know that he messed up big time. Okay? Twice, not just once, twice he tried to sell his wife into bondage slavery to someone in Egypt. Can you believe that? He got diverted on the way into Canaan by 5 years because, well, we don't really know why, but by some reason. He didn't actually take the land himself. Only his descendants took the land. And he had to buy a field to bury his wife because they didn't own any land. So this story isn't the wonderful, "Yah, yah, you know, good, go for it, Abraham. You've really been successful." He was a bit of a disaster. So I take comfort in that. Yeah? Because God still worked. Because in all his inadequacy, Abraham still wanted to do what God had called him to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is it that God's calling you to do? What's he calling me to do now? Who knows? But please respond. Don't let that just go off into the ether. Yeah. If God is touching your heart, calling you into something, and I'm not talking about an international thing like Charles Trust. I'm talking about anything that God calls you to do. Yeah. Just do it. Just listen to that voice. And you will know untold blessing. In the name of Jesus.